On my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich, we're getting down to the truth behind the names that you know and love. Unfiltered conversations with legends like Leanne Morgan, Kathy Griffin, Ricky Lake, to find out when they feel the most on par. We're breaking it down with Don Lemon, Aaron Parnas, Lamonte Jones, laughing it up with Josh Johnson, Dan Soder, many more. You know, the results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready.
Ready.
Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short routes.
The boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception Perception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Coe, Matt Harmon here with you. You listen to Reception Perception of the show. All right. Beautiful rundown in front of us here today, Matt. We're going to be talking about Isaac Tesla, Torrey Horton, Kyle Williams. Guys that I thought really flashed some serious, serious potential last year. But man, they go into 2026 with a very, very murky outlook.
Yeah. All guys that I would agree with you are, or they showed something in like on a sliding scale, right? It kind of depends. I would say Horton probably showed the most complete game and the best flashes. Now we'll talk about Isaac Tesla. He showed like the coolest flashes, right? In terms of the best highlight reel potentially in the NFL. Sure. And then definitely Kyle Williams, like you saw glimpses of it, but they were very few and far in between. And I would agree with your kind of categorization there. These are three guys that I posted profiles on Friday. These guys all went up to kind of complete the current year two drop, moving on to year three. Receivers now, those guys will be up on June 1st, and it was an interesting just kind of roundup of players, guys that, yeah, these are all, I would say all three of these guys and the other two that I posted, Pat Bryan and Alec Iomanner, again to varying degrees, all look like they could be contributing quality receivers in NFL receiver rooms. But these are the type of guys where I think these are the most, these are the ones that are most at risk, kind of, James, of the thing I keep talking about, which is that there's too many good receivers in the NFL and there's too many good receivers coming into the NFL every single year. I mean, shoot, we're not, again, he's not on the rundown today, but Pat Bryant, like at the end of this season, it's like, oh, wow, yeah, showing a little something could be, you know, the kind of the number two receiver in Denver. And then they trade for Jalen Waddle. It's like, yeah. Well, all right, how many targets is Pat Bryant going to get? And that's true definitely of all three of these guys we're talking about today.
For sure. And we'll start with Isaac Tesla, because as you mentioned, his highlight package is incredible. Like, if you just watched his highlights on YouTube, amazing stuff. You know, I mean, we're talking one-handed grab, a lot of touchdown grabs for Tesla down the field. 55.6% success rate versus man, not good. 77% success rate versus zone, again, not good, but I think there's a reason for that. And then 66.7% success rate versus press. Again, I think we're approaching average here, but still we got some room. So I think overall it looks like the profile for Isaac Tesla is a guy who is still a work in progress, which is to be expected for a receiver who was expected to be a work in progress.
Yeah, he was expected to be a developmental guy. If you did not follow us during the draft process, did not follow kind of my, what was a little bit of like, it almost kind of became a weird obsession with Isaac Tesla, because he was such an interesting prospect with all of these awesome athletic traits, but just no college production whatsoever, nothing really to speak of. As a matter of fact, he was not even the most productive receiver on his Arkansas team that was in last year's draft class. That was actually Andrew Armstrong, who was a player I liked the film on, but was, you know, 25 years old and led the SEC in receiving. So it wasn't that there was no production to be had. Like, I mean, like I said, Andrew Armstrong led the SEC in receiving that year, and that Isaac Tesla just not involved whatsoever, but he tore it up at like Hillsdale College, which is where he transferred in from.
Great athlete.
But an incredible athlete. Like, you look at some of the athletic comparables, it was like Javon Walker, Roma Dunze, Allen Robinson, these like big hulking X receivers, right? Like, that's who he kind of compared to. But then again, he was used as a big slot player at Arkansas in his reception perception profile. And that was really what was interesting, so a 68.7%, excuse me, 70% snaps in the slot. In his prospect profile, he was off the line on 70%, which just made it even then more interesting that the Lions traded multiple future picks to go get him in last year's draft in the third round, which, like, right. I liked Isaac Tesla as a prospect, but even that was ahead of where I would have kind of had him. So they make this big bet on him. We joked about it after the draft, James, like, is this guy their tush push special? Like, what is this? Cause he was a quarterback in high school. Is he their Taysom Hill? You know, what's going on here? A little bit tongue in cheek, obviously, on that, because clearly he's an interesting developmental receiver. But he goes to this team in Detroit that he was used as a big slot in college, and they already had a guy who, you know, is one of the better slots in the league, and Amon-Ra St. Brown. So very interesting pick by Detroit. So that's like the background on Tesla as a prospect and what I think makes him so interesting, which will kind of like hang in the background here of our discussion about him as year two coming in here and what he did in year one from a reception perception standpoint.
Tesla 6'4 at his combine. He had an overall athleticism score from Next Gen Stats at 96 points. Was ranked number one by Next Gen Stats in terms of wide receivers for the 2025 combine. We're talking about a guy who at that size, you know, 6'4, 215 pounds, ran a 4.43, had a 39.5-inch vertical, near a 10.9 broad jump. So yeah, this guy can get out the gym, man. Like, he is an absolute stud athlete. Okay, now that being said, they had this guy running a ton of downfield routes. Matt, we're taking a look at 26% route participation on the 9 route, 11.6 route participation on the post. So they're asking this guy to go out there and make downfield plays, which, again, when we start talking about his man scores, his zone scores, stuff like that, those are going to be impacted by that quite a bit.
Correct. Yeah, those are going to be impacted by that. The fact that he's almost exclusively a downfield receiver. I mean, fewer than 20% of his routes are curl, slant, screen, 1.5%. Like, it's pretty much about 20% of his routes are curl, slant, screen, flat. Like, it's just no layups whatsoever. No layups. For Isaac Tesla. And of course, you obviously have to take that sort of stuff in context when you're looking at the overall success rate. So it's important to look at kind of the route by route data. And he has some pretty solid success rates there. I mean, he definitely can get down the football field. I thought he was pretty impressive in that regard. And just from an alignment standpoint, I think this was really interesting with him, because, like I mentioned, there's no way he's going to be this big slot option for Detroit for the most part, because they have Amon-Ra St. Brown, who's actually playing fewer and fewer snaps on a percentage basis in the slot as he goes along in his career. He's what, about like 40 to 44% last year in the slot, if I remember correctly. And I think that actually, I started to think about that as I was charting out Isaac Tesla, because Tesla definitely played more outside than inside, just under 69% snaps in the slot in the game sampled. He was on the line of scrimmage for 55%, off it for 45%. So, you know, rather even split, but skewing more towards on ball than off of it. But he still, again, is in the slot on 29%. He's in the backfield at just under 3%. So I think if you're getting the picture here, they kind of asked him to play all three receiver positions.
Yeah.
Right. In this offense last year. And obviously we know that it's a more of a vertical offense under John Morton and sort of the structure that they went to last year in Detroit, which they obviously demoted John Morton to begin in the middle of the season. They've now hired Drew Petzing to be their offensive coordinator. It's still going to relatively look like the same offense, but they were definitely, I think, a little more vertically inclined last year than they probably want to be
for sure
going forward, and what they were under Ben Johnson for sure. But they still do want to look for explosive plays and hunt down the field, just a little less of the static stuff, some of these 9 routes that Tesla was running last year. But still, asked him to play all three receiver positions, and I think that was sort of maybe the thought process for Isaac Tesla, is that he had all this experience playing in the slot, so you knew he could play in the slot if he could figure it out. But because he had these athletic traits, and if you go back and look at his college route success rate chart, he actually was really good on the downfield routes. in limited flashes. He could separate and get open against man and especially zone coverage down the field. I think maybe that was the thought process, was that he could play in the slot, but also he had skills to actually translate long term to what is kind of the big bodied outside receiver that they've been looking for, I think, to complete this room, which is where I'm guessing they're at with Tesla right now, is that he's the third receiver. He'll be the third receiver this year. He allows them to play St. Brown a little bit more outside because they have a credible answer in the slot. And for Jameson Williams, Tesla emerging, and he started to play more snaps in the back half of the year, which of course coincides with Sam Laporta's injury and Dan Campbell taking over the play calling, and also to Jameson Williams having these massive first half, second half splits. And I want to obviously go in and look at Jameson Williams' season in full, but I did chart a good handful of those back half games. It felt like he was playing a little bit less on ball than previous seasons, which I think is good for a guy like Jameson Williams, that you want him to get some of these runway routes. So obviously a little bit sacrificial, Isaac Tesla, in that way, from the X receiver standpoint, but allows them to activate their two other receivers while also having a guy here who showed some promising ability against zone coverage and being able to win downfield.
Again, as I mentioned, nearly 26% route participation on the nine. Here's the good thing, though. Incredible success rate. You're talking about this high of a route participation on a just go ahead and go downfield and go win it route. Nearly 63% success rate on the ninth. That is really, really good. Now, I imagine part of that is going to be, okay, well, defenses are not trying to stop Isaac Tesla, and that's fine. But still, showing that even in those kind of looks, he's going down there and winning, right? And so I think that's really, really important. 11.6 route participation on the post route, nearly 70% there. Again, we'd want that just a touch higher, but I think that's totally fine too. And then on the underneath stuff, man, like 10% route participation on the slant. Obviously, you'd like to see more there. You'd like to see a higher route participation on the slant. But 85% success rate, Matt, like, golly, he's beating you underneath, and he can absolutely dunk on you over the top.
Yeah, and obviously saw him dunk on people big time from like a highlight reel standpoint, a contested catch standpoint. That was something, again, in his limited looks as a collegiate prospect, it was like, damn, this guy really can win in tight coverage. And that absolutely translated to his year one tape. I mean, he's 32%.
He's a fun player, man. He's a fun player.
I mean, we're not going to go crazy with what the production looks like this year. He caught a pass on 7% of his sampled routes in reception perception. So, and I think that it probably won't be that dramatic in terms of the, low usage. I think he will get more footballs thrown his way this year. I think he will be more of a routine player in the offense, but for the most part, he's the fifth target in the passing game, behind St. Brown, James Williams, Sam Laporta, Jahmyr Gibbs, then it's Isaac Tesla. So we can't go crazy with statistical the projections here, but I think what you can be happy about is that when he makes plays, he's shown he's like a playmaker, right?
For sure.
Good hands, obviously attacks the football well, 32% contested target rate. He won 5 of 7 contested catches. He didn't drop any passes through his sample. So I think that he's got good hands and is developing some feel for zone coverage. You mentioned just 77.2% success rate. That did get better as the sample went on. I thought he really figured out how to settle in the back half of the year. He's a developmental receiver, but already showed he's not hopeless, right? Like in year there's already good proof of concept to the development of this guy. And he, unlike a player, again, we're not talking about him today, but like Elik Iomanner in Tennessee last year, he was another guy that I thought was a developmental receiver and just got pushed into the deep end right away. And it didn't go very well. And now you're like, okay, we need to strip it down before we build him back up, right? Type of player. I think that's the same with Dante Thornton in Las Vegas, another day three rookie receiver that got pushed into the deep end right away. And now it's like, okay, he's got to fall back in the pecking order. Whereas with Isaac Tesla, you get to bring him along slow because of all these guys they have in the room. Yep. And I think you see that development kind of like play out over the course of the season. And another thing with him too is like, even if he's just And, you know, you sit here and talk about, okay, they traded all these third round picks. Like, they took him ahead of consensus, yada, yada, yada. But even if he's just a guy that makes plays when he's called upon, mm-hmm. and because of an alignment standpoint, he allows you to get more out of two guys that you've committed big money to and, like, are on multi-year extensions in Amon-Ra St. Brown and in Jameson Williams. Like, I almost think that's a win in and of itself, especially because, of, like, he's not wasted reps out there. Yes, his role is a little bit sacrificial. We're talking about a guy who is outside on 69% and on ball for 55% of his snaps, and he's running a go route at this extreme, you know, volume. Right. Like, that is pretty sacrificial. But at the same time, like, he did show an ability to get open on other routes. So that's a promising sign. Yeah, he's a credible threat. I like that way of framing it.
I don't think he's sacrificial. I think he's a credible threat. I think that's the way I kind of view him. Like he's not like of the Mac Hollins role. You know what I'm saying? Like, where you're just like, all right, just run burners down the field and get their safeties tired or get their secondary tired. Like, that's not, if he's open, he's going to get the ball. And if they throw him the ball again, he's a credible threat to make a big time play. It doesn't always have to be about fantasy football, you know. It doesn't have to be about stats. This show is really not focused on that. It's about, okay, if Isaac Tesla develops and takes another step forward, and in his development becomes a good, solid, reliable X receiver, this room in Detroit becomes one of the scariest, if not the scariest, in the NFL, right? Mm-hmm. You've got an unbelievable receiver in Amon-Ra St. Brown. You have a super explosive player in Jameson Williams. Then you pair that with a third wide receiver who is super explosive, can also win underneath, and is a credible threat along the boundaries. Like, okay, this is one of the scariest rooms if Tesla develops into a reliable third option in the wide receiver room. But as you mentioned, man, like, production-wise, he's the fifth option. You know, Jahmyr Gibbs, Sam Laporta are going to be in there too. I know people are wondering, just because there's been such a heavy, you know, emphasis on 12 personnel and all that kind of stuff. Detroit's kind of sort of like in the bottom 10-ish in terms of two tight end usage. So around 15%. Of their offensive pass plays. I want to really put this in perspective here. Mm-hmm. About 15% of their pass plays last year, Matt, were out of two tight end sets. So a pretty low number. It's anywhere between 10, bottom 10 to bottom 12, depending on the charting service. So that's kind of sort of where Detroit is. When they pass the ball, they're primarily doing it out of three wide receiver sets, which is a good thing for Isaac Tesla.
Totally. Obviously, Drew Petzing, definitely a much more heavier coach, right, in previous years. Last year was pretty wacky in Arizona altogether, but definitely they could, I think they could maybe go a little bit heavier. But yeah, I think they're a team that actually looks like a unit that might be poised to kind of, I don't know, to sort of sit here and say, hey, like, we can maybe go away from the trend a little bit. And because we have two really good blocking receivers, and honestly, James Williams is like a thin framed guy, but he gives a lot of effort in the run game too. Like, I think they could sit here and say, like, we are pretty good for, we can run out of our 11 personnel grouping. And because we almost have, like, if Tesla really does develop into this type of guy, they could have almost two guys who, you know, could be credible, like, F receivers in St. Brown and Tesla, that they could really create, like, run game mismatches out of their 11 personnel grouping, because Tesla, as we keep saying, he's a viable threat. And we know Jared Goff, like, wants to throw that football over the middle of the field. They want to run play action on the in-breaking routes. Drew Petzing, that's what he wanted to do in Arizona as well. I think it's sort of hitting his DNA sort of as a play caller and everything there. And, like, that was something that stood out for Tesla, especially, again, as the year went along. 26% route percentage on dig routes and 71.2% success rate. Like, both of those numbers continued to tick up. And that's sort of what I think you're hoping the next step is. And bottom line is, too, like, I think for Detroit, I don't really know how I feel about the Lions this year. The NFC North is kind of hard to handicap right now in terms of who's going to win it. But I think for the Lions to sort of stay in this window, they kind of need more guys like this to emerge on their roster. I you know, maybe other people disagree with me. I think it's a little bit of a top heavy roster right now, where they have obviously really good big name players. This is not even like faint praise. This is real praise. But like, some of their best some of their best, their hits have all become like their best players, right? But they almost don't necessarily have like a middle class of their roster. And I kind of think that you're hoping that Isaac Tesla becomes like a middle class of the roster player, like a glue guy that brings the room together on offense that kind of gets them back into the vision and an area that where they were the few years prior to 2025. So yeah, he's an interesting role player for this team that I think will be, I like him. I really like him a lot after this kind of charting out. And like, also, by the way, hey, St. Brown misses games. Jameson Williams misses games. You got somebody who can like really step in here because they haven't necessarily had a player like that on the roster the last few years.
You know, Matt, the bottom line is for Detroit, they're going to be as successful as so long as Dan Campbell has a heavy hand in the offensive play calling. I think he's wanted to offload that, and I just don't, unless you have a Ben Johnson who is a psychopath in that room, I don't think that's what's going to, you know what I mean? Like, Dan Campbell needs to step in here and say from day one, because this is what happened down the stretch, is that he got involved offensively and the offense took off, you know, shocker. Yeah. But he needs to step in day one and just say, okay, we're going to run the offense like this. Drew Petzing is going to be my second in command, but he's going to basically run what I tell him to run, and he's going to delegate, or I'm going to delegate to him to run it in this fashion. I think the Lions will be just as successful as so long as DC gets in there and is super active.
And I think he will. I agree. I don't think he wants to call plays. I do think he wants to offload that part of it. But yeah, I do think that what last year showed us is that Dan is a really good offensive coach. Like people think of him as this, I don't know, just a meathead guy. But yeah, he's got a real good sense of what he wants from the offensive side of the football, because he came up under Sean Payton, and that's where a lot of this offense like gathers its DNA. And by the way, some of these big like slot-ish players have had a lot of success in this offensive tree. So I think Isaac Tesla can find there. Can I share a fun kind of, just, I don't know that this means anything for his career, but just kind of funny given the player who his top comparable was in the new player comparison tool. Now it's just a moderate comparison. It's not an elite or strong one. Again, we bucket them. If you missed last week's show, go back and check that out. But the player comparison tool buckets the comps on either elite, strong, moderate, or loose. So just a moderate comparison, but his most common comparable was Kenny Galladay's rookie season.
Okay.
So if you remember, people called Kenny Galladay, Babytron, like our friend J.J. Zacharyson used to call him that after Megatron. This is Babytron. And then, you know, a certain segment of people, I don't know, I definitely saw it out there on the internet last year when they drafted Isaac Tesla, you know, crazy athletic comparables. They called him Vanillatron. So, you know. The player comparison tool agrees that, and obviously Kenny Galladay, but Kenny Galladay's, some of his seasons have popped up in the player comp tool. And people are like, oh, Kenny Galladay. Like, actually, go back and look at some of Kenny Galladay's Detroit Lions years.
He was great with Detroit, dude. Come on.
Yeah, I think because of how bad it went with the Giants, and it went bad, and the reception perception was bad with the Giants too. I think it was like, oh, he was always made by Matt Stafford. And obviously, Matthew Stafford made him a lot better because Matthew Stafford's awesome.
Yeah.
But Kenny Galladay was actually a really good receiver in isolation his like last couple of years in Detroit. A reception perception would confirm that. And Galladay is one of those guys that, you know, kind of had similar-ish success rates to Tesla early in his career and then improved, you know, incrementally over the course of his career. And like I said, did have a couple of really quality seasons there. So, you know, that's like the hope for Tesla, is that he can really turn into, you know, big time wide receiver. But even if he doesn't, even if he stays as this player, kind of sticks in this like bucket success rate wise, I think he could really be a helpful player to Detroit. But I did think that was funny that he got the Vanillatron, gets the Babytron comp from the player comparison tool.
Oh, man. So you heard it here first. Isaac Tesla is going to get the bag and then just quit on his team. Okay, so that's we heard it here first. That's what Matt said.
When the stakes rise and the lights get bright, that's when you find out who can really swim. Deep Waters is a new UFC podcast from CBS Sports. Every Monday, myself, Dean Thomas, alongside with legends of the sport, Chris Weidman, Jorge Masvidal, and Dustin Poirier, bring you inside the octagon like no one else can. Deep Waters, new episodes every Monday. Watch on YouTube or listen on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you get podcasts.
Torrey Horton is another very interesting player. 69% success rate versus man, 78% success rate versus zone. So we're creeping up there. It's pretty good. 76% success rate versus press. That's a good number, man. So again, if you're new to reception perception, we're looking for that 70, 80 benchmarks, right? 70% versus man, 80% versus zone. Torrey Horton, just a touch under both of those benchmarks. But I think overall for a rookie player, man, these are very encouraging scores. It just happens to be the biggest question mark is, can he reclaim any of those snaps against Rashid Shaheed, who they traded for? You've got JSN. You've got Cooper Kupp. They spent a first-round draft pick and a running back in Jadarian Price. You figure he's going to get some work. This is a heavy 12-personnel grouping team, and Rashid Shaheed is here. So, again, I thought there was some really, really interesting moments for Torrey Horton before he got hurt. I'm just curious, do you think Matt Harmon, Torrey Horton can come in and reclaim some of those snaps versus Rashid Shaheed?
Yeah, and you know who his I won't keep pimping the player comparison tool here, but I'm going to do it one more time. His most common compare, and again, it's just a moderate comparison, same thing with the Tesla conversation we just had. Torrey Horton's top comparable player in the reception perception database is literally 2025 Rashid Shaheed. which might just go to show maybe he just is permanently blocked by the guy that they traded for and was like, okay, well, we got to trade for somebody, let's trade for this type of guy, because that's kind of what we were losing. Because people forget, like, Torrey Horton had that breakout game against Washington and then was hurt, and that was it. Like, so this sample of eight games in Torrey Horton's reception perception sample, this is it. This is the season. Yeah. Like, he's not one of these guys, and we've seen this with some players. You know, Travis Hunter was the same way, where we don't get, like, the conversation we were just having with Isaac Tesla, where, oh, actually, like, he really improved in the back half of the year, so the success rate started to go up. You don't get that with Torrey Horton. You just get the first eight games. That's it. Travis Hunter,
you get
the first.
And they were pretty good.
And they were pretty good. Like, and yeah, so again, you don't get the benefit of that sort of second half, the post-buy rookie bump, whatever you want to call it, because the last game against Washington was it. It was all that we got from Torrey Horton. But even in these games, you know, pretty solid numbers for Horton as a primary, almost exclusive outside receiver, 82.3% snaps outside. He was on the line of scrimmage for 59%, off of it for 41%. So definitely somebody that is a guy who mostly just flips between X and Z, kind of depending on what you want from Jaxon Smith-Njigba. And I thought that was something that, you know, maybe I wouldn't say missing from the offense, because they still got a ton out of JSN, obviously. He's the offensive player of the year. They won the freaking Super Bowl. And even, especially in big games, they did a lot to move JSN around. But that was something in that Washington game that Torrey Horton was out there smoking press man coverage on the perimeter, and allowed them to do a little bit more with moving JSN around, as opposed to when it was JSN and Cooper Kupp as the two receivers, because Kupp at this point has to play off ball and has to play in the slot. Horton can play outside on the line of scrimmage and allow them to move JSN around and kind of find those mismatches and things like that. So, yeah, I do think we got to figure out whether Torrey Horton's even going to see the field this year. But I think what we see in his RP profile is that, yeah, really quality young receiver who definitely wins in important ways.
Again, Rashid Shaheed signed a 3-year, $51 million contract extension, basically $35 million guaranteed, which is a lot. The annual average salary there, $17 million for Rashid Shaheed. Now, part of that is that he gave them a huge lift on the special team side, which Torrey Horton was not doing. But again, this is a heavy 12 personnel or two tight end set team. Again, according to Next Gen Stats, they were top 10 in tight end, two plus tight end usage on passing downs. So on passing downs, there's just not a lot of room here for three wide receivers. Even if Kupp were to take a step back, which I'm not sure they do, if this is a team that really wants to run that rock, JSN's going to be out there every single snap. Cooper Kupp, I imagine will be heavily utilized, and then they'll mix in a lot of Rashid Shaheed. Man, Matt, this just, and it sucks because I thought he looked really, really good to Torrey Horton. I just don't know how he gets on the football field, man.
Yeah, 80th percentile success rate versus press for Torrey Horton. Really that quality number. Good. Yeah, really good. I really like his release work off the line. Like, I think he knows how to fight through contact, sink his hips, yeah. Combative upper body. Like, he's one of these receivers where I don't think, like, sometimes, especially these young guys, it's all footwork against press. And okay, that's great. But, like, you got to use that combative upper body technique and everything. And Torrey Horton definitely does do that. So I really like his ability to sort of fight off press, get into his routes. So, yeah, good. That's probably the best result for him. I think he straight up has the skills to hang at X receiver in the NFL, especially if he continues to develop. So that is something that will be interesting. With it's a new offensive coordinator, I do think Brian Flores is not going to go away from a lot of the heavy personnel stuff, and obviously not from the outside zone world. That was why they hired him over from San Francisco as the run game coordinator and the tight ends coach, is what he's right. doing there. So I think it's going to be a lot of tight end stuff. There's going to be a lot of wide receiver. There's going to be a lot of outside zone. Those boxes will be checked. But when they get into 11 personnel, I do think it will at least be interesting to track, like, Cooper Kupp's usage. And could they be one of these teams? Like, there's a handful of them. Houston is another one. If Tank Dell's healthy, and obviously if Torrey Horton's healthy, that's another thing. They probably don't feel like they can count on Torrey Horton, because again, if you remember in last year's draft, I thought Torrey Horton was a second round talent, goes in the fifth round because of injuries, and then injuries end his rookie season. So it's this might not be a guy.
It's a great
He's a thin, wiry type of receiver too. He's got a lanky frame. Maybe they don't think he can survive as an every down player. Again, to sort of make that, I'm not comparing him to Tank Dell as a player, but I think Houston this year, if Tank Dell's healthy, they could be one of those teams where it's like Nico Collins is on the field all the time. Higgins, Noel Dell are like kind of rotating and nobody hits like 60% route participation. Yeah. I could kind of see that here in Seattle too. Especially if they go to heavy personnel packages as much as they did last year, or at least in that ballpark. JSN is on the field all the time. We're not worried about his, you know, route participation. But then, like, Horton rotates, Shaheed rotates, Kupp rotates, and maybe by the end of the year, Kupp is playing less and the younger guys like Horton and Shaheed are playing more. I don't know, but that's I do think there's a handful of teams this year. This could be sort of the fallout of so many teams going to heavy personnel packages where one guy – and this, we saw this honestly with JSN last year. He just dominated targets and routes for this team.
Yep.
But it could be even more exaggerated because there's so much depth in the receiver room. You don't want to just like cut off paths to development for all these guys, but you do have an established one, which Seattle does. And again, the Houston example, they have an established one in Nico Collins, but you do want to get these other guys snaps and routes and reps and stuff like that. So they all become kind of rotatey, you know, behind the alpha. And I could see that a little bit here in Seattle because I've heard they still like Torrey Horton. They were happy with what they got from him. And, you know, he was even like a potential activation in the playoffs, but just never got back healthy for them.
Yeah.
So I think they still like him. I don't think they want to cut off past the development, but clearly they also want to kind of give themselves some insurance from him not being able to stay on the football field.
By the way, everyone is so familiar now with like running back by committee. The NFL is moving towards a wide receiver two by committee is what we're moving towards here. And I wonder if this is what they've developed here in Seattle. I mean, again, Shaheed got a big contract. They love Cooper Kupp. Torrey Horton showed a lot of flashes here. They're going to have to figure out playtime between those three guys.
Yeah, and I do wonder, just like maybe I'll think about this more and more, like which are the teams that could be wide receiver two by committee because they are there's a little bit too much depth and they're too good, you know, there's too many good players to just completely cut them off. But yeah, I do think just again, in a hypothetical world, if Torrey Horton is ever a full-time player, he checks a lot of boxes that I really like from good starting perimeter receivers in the NFL. Just under 70% success rate versus man, 69%, inching up towards 80% against zone and 76% against press. Like these are all really good marks from a rookie that went in the frickin' fifth round. Again, not because of talent, but because of injuries. And especially because of the route tree that he has. Like his best routes, post, dig, slant, you're going to get a lot of targets on those big in-breaking routes in this type of offensive system. So, yeah, obviously, I'm a big fan of Rashid Shaheed as well. So I don't want to just say, like, oh, let's push Shaheed aside. I like his game a lot.
Sure.
And he's it's just funny that he's the same, you know, kind of player comparison there from the player comparison tool, those two guys. But yeah, I'm fascinated to see how this room works out. But definitely Horton will be kind of like a deep sleeper for me, just somebody to keep an eye on because I do really, really like the talent.
Yeah, it's I think his, from a quote-unquote fantasy perspective, man, like it will be injury-dependent. Yes. Somebody's got to get injured in front of him for him to pop. But again, just highlighting some of these routes. 80% success rate on the dig route. 82% success rate on the slant route. 74% success rate on the post route. These are extremely good numbers. They're all in-breakers, but they're also at all three levels. So we're talking about a guy who has weapons and can get open at all three levels. Also want to point out 100% success rate on comebacks with 7.5% route participation. Yeah, that's notable. Not nothing.
Yeah,
that's
not nothing. Yeah, agree. That was notable.
That's amazing. So Torrey Horton is a separator at all three levels. Can he get on the football field? We shall
Let's
see.
Let's hope.
All right, in New England, Kyle Williams, he's an interesting player because a lot of his numbers look really, really bad. But that being said, Matt, do we throw out his numbers entirely? Because after the A.J. Brown trade is completed, we're assuming this is going to happen, obviously, does his role just get completely turned on its head? I mean, this is a player that played almost exclusively on the outside, but then New England goes and gets Romeo Dubs and they get A.J. Brown. Right, they already have Matt Collins. They've got Kayshon Booty. They've got Pop Douglas. Low key, this is actually a pretty deep room after all the trades, man. So, where does Kyle Williams fit in? For me, I thought this guy was going to be a great, you know, outside, you know, inside wide receiver, just not on the X, like so flanker slot player. Again, I look at the numbers. The numbers are not good. Let me just say that the numbers are bad. But I almost want to say, okay, it doesn't matter because his role will be completely changed.
I'm honestly, I was shocked by Kyle Williams' role last year. I haven't charted Kayshon Booty yet. By the way, Kayshon Booty might be, he's not at OTAs right now. He's been like in trade rumors and you kind of wonder like once the AJ Brown trade is, they have like too many kind of outside X receivers. If it's AJ Brown, it's Romeo Dubs and it's Kayshon Booty. And this Kyle Williams profile makes me want to go chart Kayshon Booty, and I'm sure I will. Obviously, I believe he's a year four player. He'll be year four, going in year four, I believe. So he'll be included in that drop there. But anyways, I say all that to say that I was shocked by Kyle Williams' usage because, James, I think you can make an argument that this is the most sacrificial X receiver season I have ever charted since 2014, which is shocking for a guy who, was a perimeter player at Eastern, you know, Washington. Right?
Eastern Washington State.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. All right. So shocking that he would get thrown into this particular role. Like, yeah, he was perimeter receiver, but he's 5'10", 190 something pounds. Like, he's not exactly this like X receiver body type, but he took 92% of his sampled snaps outside as a rookie. And was on the line of scrimmage for 90.3%. You know, to get into some receiver alignment dork stuff, I have just three receiver seasons out of almost 550 charted since 2014 among NFL players where a player took 90% of their snaps outside and 90% on the line of scrimmage. Those three seasons were Alec Pierce as a rookie in 2022, Preston Williams as a rookie in 2019, and Deontay Johnson in Matt Canada's high school offense in 2021. I have not logged another season since 2023 where a receiver was on ball for 90% of their snaps, and I have just three where a receiver was outside on 90% of their snaps. That was Rashad Bateman in 2023, Quentin Johnson in 2023, and George Pickens last season. Like, this is some archaic deployment for a wide receiver, even at the X receiver spot. And I know, obviously, Kyle Williams was a part-time player last year for the Patriots, which, again, this is why I really want to go chart the Kayshon Booty stuff now at this point. And I will here in the next, coming weeks and everything. But just to take it one step further, not just the alignment, which is very, very, very X only, to make the sacrificial point.
Yeah.
Williams's route tree obviously heavily skews towards downfield routes, and he ran a 9 route on 33% of his charted routes.
That's outrageous, dude.
I have only one season since the 2022 season. It was George Pickens, another like ex receiver guy, which a receiver ran a go route on over 30% of their charted routes. The 90% outside on ball X guys I said earlier, which was Alec Pierce 22, Preston Williams 19, and Deontay Johnson at 21, their 9 route rate was 21%. Kyle Williams is 33%. So again, I think you could make a really, really strong argument that this is the most sacrificial X receiver. Like, just run down the field and clear out shit underneath for your teammates, and you are never, ever going to get catches. In his sample, I mean, he barely had any receptions, barely had any freaking targets did Kyle Williams. And again, I'm aware he is a part-time player, but he had 7 catches, 23 targets, so he caught a pass on 5% of his routes.
Not good.
In this Not sample good. Of games.
By the way, I misspoke. I thought Eastern Washington. No, actually UNLV, and then he transfers to Washington State. I just looked that up because I was like, I don't know if that's actually true. Anyways, but UNLV to Washington State. Just wanted to clarify that for the Kyle Williams bros out there. But no, it's I'm just curious, you know, like the numbers obviously were not good. The route participation, as you mentioned, 33% 9 route participation, 18% route participation on the post route. That is, again, outrageous stuff. Over 50% route participation on the corner 9 and post. Over 50%, Matt. That is ridiculous. What? Yeah,
it's insane.
That's insane.
Sub 20% on curl, slant, screen, and flat.
Crazy. That's a lot of routes. I mean,
it's a lot of it is a lot of just downfield routes. And the crazy thing is, like, I actually think the fact that he had a 63% success rate on 9 routes was pretty promising. Like,
he
can absolutely rip it. He does have speed, and he does have the ability to separate this Kyle Williams. Yeah. And even on those routes I mentioned, 80% success rate on curls, 81% on slants, 100% on flats, which who cares? It's barely any routes. But like the slant route, I think he actually did show an ability to get open, like when you watched him in isolation. So yeah, I mean, it's just, it's really hard to take anything honestly from this profile because it's so bizarro land and it's so sacrificial X receiver stuff. But yeah, I think there's almost no shot that if he had a role like this, he is going to ever be like a productive player in the NFL. And because again, 5'10", 190, a guy who definitely, I think, can separate. He separated pretty well in college, and he showed some ability in very, 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 very limited looks to separate last year. There's probably a usage path that's available for him. It's just not as an X receiver. And I would be shocked based on the additions that of AJ Brown potentially, and even of Romeo Doubs, who was an X receiver for the Packers last year. Like I think Kyle Williams needs to play in the slot and needs to play at the Z spot. And I think if he does, like, there's a path forward for him. It's just really hard in this role. It's not going to happen.
No. Which again, I don't think he's going to play any X at all. Given his size and, you know, just his skill set, I don't see him playing X almost at all, especially after the team, if they do complete the AJ Brown trade. And on top of that, Mac Hollins is still on the roster. Pop Douglas, Demario Douglas is still on the roster too. It seems as if Kyle Williams has a few roadblocks in front of him in terms of playing time. If he is a part-time player out of the slot with Pop Douglas, that's not a very productive spot. We're taking a look at it here, right? So, Yeah, it's a tough road, I think, ahead for Kyle Williams. And this is despite the fact that, again, as you mentioned, one downfield, 63% success rate on the 9 route. Anything above 55%, guys, is good, you know. And for him to hit over 60%, that's really good. So 63% is really, really good. We've got 81% success rate on the slant. Anything above 80% is really, really good. He's obviously broken through that barrier. And then 80%. on the curl route, which again, that's in the intermediate area. So I just highlight these routes, Matt, because short, intermediate on the curl, and then deep on the nine, I just look for guys that can win on all three levels. And Kyle Williams, even though his aggregate scores are really, really bad, if you just parse it down into those individual areas, he can actually win.
Right. I exactly. That's the thing. I think you saw it's super limited flashes. This is a very, very tiny sample, even for a full eight game sample. We're talking about, 237 snaps, 139 routes. It's not a lot.
Not a lot.
A quarter of those routes are just run downfield, buddy. Run downfield. Did make a couple cool catches on those nine routes. So, you know, there's that. It's just tough with this profile. So last year with the Patriots receiver room, Hunter Henry, tight end, 72% route participation according to fantasy points data. Stephon Diggs leads the way at the wide receiver position with 65% routes. On the season, because when Kayshon Boutte was healthy, he was like 69%. Then it was Mac Hollins at 59%, Demario Douglas at 35%, Kyle Williams all the way down at sub 28%. So I think what we could see this I really wonder, like, what's their commitment level with Demario Douglas, because they barely used him last year. When they did, they kind of had him be like a man. He was efficient. Yards per out run was good for Demario Douglas. They got him on these like big in-breaking and out-breaking routes against man coverage. He was actually pretty efficient there. So that was like good play design and pretty good play by Pop Douglas as like a bigger downfield slot. Not big size-wise, but big catches against man coverage. I wonder just what's their commitment level to him, because he was healthy last year and he was only a part-time player. So like the Stephon Diggs role is what's really interesting here to me, because I don't think Diggs is coming back to New England. I think he will be elsewhere this year. By the way, should be a Kansas City Chief, by the way. Should Stephon Diggs. That's my new thing for him. He should go there after his
he's going to be a Raider. Watch.
Come on, enough. Like they got young guys. They don't need that. They need he's a mercenary. He's in the mercenary phase of his career. Now Diggs been in the mercenary phase of like helping out young quarterbacks the last 2 years. CJ Stroud year two, Drake May obviously year two last year. So maybe we'll see who's a year two quarterback that needs some help. Actually, kind of several guys. But anyways, but point whatever. Diggs not coming back. But 65% routes for Steph Diggs. He was a part-time player for them, kind of rotating between slot and Z. But like, that's not the role Dobbs is going to play. They didn't sign Dobbs to replace, Stephon Diggs. They signed Dobbs essentially to replace Kayshon Boutte. If not, then like AJ Brown to replace Kayshon Boutte. I don't know. So it's just weird kind of that part of it. But that's the role. I think to me, when they drafted Kyle Williams, I thought, oh, that's their long-term replacement for Stephon Diggs, who even without the legal issues, which, he's not facing any legal consequences. So there is that. But like, even without those this year, I thought he might only be like a 1 year bet for New England. So we'll see. I think that was sort of to me what I would imagine him doing, not this like X receiver stuff. And I think based on their moves this offseason, hopefully New England agrees. But they could also just be like out on Kyle Williams. Would be a little weird to be out on him because he was a guy coming from the lower levels and did need development. Certainly somebody I still want to keep an eye on, but just is absolutely going to have a different role than whatever the hell was going on last year.
How dare you disrespect the Pac-2 in this way, saying that Washington State is a lower level program? How dare you?
I don't know. What is the Pac-2?
This is Washington State, Oregon State. That's it. Because the Pac-12 got dissolved.
Oh my God. Oh, okay. Well, I don't keep up with this stuff. College conferences and things of that nature. So.
I want to talk
stand by what I said.
How dare you disrespect the conference in that way? In terms of 12 personnel usage or 13 personnel usage, out of passing downs, New England was middle of the road. So around 22-23% according to Next Gen stats. But, you move a few plays here and there and they're like top 12. You move a few plays down, they're bottom 12. It's very much middle of the road in terms of how often they used multiple tight ends.
And they took Eli Raritan, Max Toscano's boy. So very interested to see what he can do because Max really liked him a lot. So excited to see what Eli Raritan can be there, because Hunter Henry was fine last year, Austin Hooper is like a nothing burger. I don't know that they were getting a lot of that 12 personnel stuff last year. Maybe they'll get more this year, but tight end can be slow burn, so we'll see.
All right, there you go. Again, I appreciate all the comments that we've been getting on both the Apple side and on the Spotify side. We got a few Spotify comments here. These are a little bit dated, but that's okay. This is from Chris White. In regards to Stripling, as a 49ers fan, I feel better about the reach. Not necessarily good, but better. If you want to find our past episode talking about DeJon Stripling going to the San Francisco 49ers, go look for that. Jake Woodburn, I'm in full support of Ben Johnson, biblical greed. reference to a conversation we had about the whole offense and them piling up talents that can what at the wide receiver position?
It was the Sam Roush and Xavier Thomas pick.
Oh, that's what it was. Yes.
Yeah. So and my question for Jake would be: are you in full support of Ben Johnson exercising his biblical greed, or are you in full support of the idea of it? Because, as a concept, as an idea, right? Yeah. I'm curious. I mean, for Bears fans, listen: whatever Ben wants, Ben should get. That's the deal. And yes, and he wants 100%. Xavier Thomas to be his next Khalif Raymond. He's gonna get it.
There you go. And Adrian, excellent content, gentlemen. Just a very generic one, which we appreciate, by the way. We appreciate those, too. So Adrian, Jake, and Chris, we appreciate the comments, man. And for everyone who's on the comment section on the Spotify and Apple side, man, that'd be great. But if you guys could do us a huge favor, 5-star review. Leave us a 5-star review. That would be very helpful for the podcast. That'd be very good as well. And yeah, man, we got some things cooking here. Again, if you guys are new to the Reception Perception universe, there's a lot of running back profiles. We're going to be talking about running back profiles here on this upcoming show, but tight end stuff, quarterback stuff, the player comparison tool, which is a lot of fun. This is by far the most active Reception Perception has been in an offseason, and it's really, really fun because it feels so very complete on the offensive side of the football.
Yeah, never been a better time to subscribe, 100%. So hopefully you guys are loving it on the site. I know I'm loving it. At putting everything together and doing all the work. And I know I could speak for everybody else on the team that they are loving it as well. So yeah, it's a great time. I love it. We can actually call it now the Reception Perception universe, because it's a little bit more of a universe with all of our positions, some of the tools and stuff like that. The Dynasty ranking tool, if you guys haven't checked that out, that's a good one too. So hopefully just going to keep getting better and better, man.
All right, there you go. All right, so be sure to check it out, receptionperception.com. But we got to go. For Matt Harmon, I'm James Coe. We'll see you. But remember, it's never too late to chase your dreams. All right, peace.
What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.